Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Your life, your country. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast.
We're going to keep on fighting for every man and woman and child all across this land. With every ounce of heart and might and sweat and soul, we're going to keep making America great again. And then we will indeed keep America great. We will keep it so great. Better than ever before. We're going to keep it better than ever before. And that is why tonight I stand before you to officially launch my campaign for a second term as President of the United States. Thank you.
You are listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast after what was just a raucous start to the 2020 campaign for re-election. Donald Trump in Orlando, Florida. By now you've seen or heard many of the clips. We'll revisit some of them, but I will say that what I got out of this and watching this and on Fox last night is, despite what you hear in the lamestream media and despite what you read and all of the negativity 24/7 on cable news, there is an enormous amount of heart in this country and an enormous amount of appreciation and support for this president's agenda. What he's been actually able to accomplish with the albatross around his neck of the Mueller investigation. So even with Mueller, even with everything that's happened, even with his children being threatened with jail, they said he was going to be marched out of the White House. So we go to prison. Ivanka's going to prison. I mean, all of that. And the man went to work every day and hit it out of the park for the American people. Peace and prosperity. Promises made, promises kept.
As I said on a wonderful, beautiful day at my inauguration, we did not merely transfer power from one party to another, but we transferred power back to you, the proud citizens of the United States of America.
It was a capacity crowd on what was a rainy, stormy day, intermittent sunshine. People stood and sat through the rain just to make sure they had a decent spot to be able to see him. And again, this is after, you know, we've had Donald Trump on the scene for 4 years. Right? It's amazing. I mean, 4 years went by really fast when he first came down that escalator. But 4 years later, we still have 20,000 people in the middle of the week showing up for him. Now, the size of the crowd and the rally, that doesn't mean that it's going to be a cakewalk by any stretch for him to win in 2020. But just when you heard the accomplishments ticked off, one after the other, renegotiating NAFTA, now Congress has to do the job. Obviously, record low unemployment, record low unemployment for key minority groups. Consumer confidence, after taking a slight dip in June, still way above the average. GDP strength, the envy of the world our economy is today, all because of Trump's policies. And I've argued consistently that Trump's policies and his accomplishments have sometimes been obscured by the president's own, you know, record of tweeting or tonality issues. But then I think to myself, I understand why he feels the need to tweet, because he knows the mainstream press will not discuss and or even be remotely fair, I should say, about the challenges the country faces for sure, but what has been accomplished undoubtedly. So he's very frustrated about that. Of course, the usual suspects at MSNBC said, well, here it is.
The stuff that obviously worked for him in 2016, and now it just feels like it's like a greatest hits, a K-Tell greatest hits collection. And they sound a little dated.
I got it.
They sound a little dated.
I mean, no disrespect to the king of rock and roll, but this is Elvis in 77.
Yeah.
Just kind of lumbering across the stage, sweating. It's Elvis
sweating. Late
in 77,
stage.
Sweating, yeah. Trying to sing the old hits, yeah, but his heart's just not really in it, so, right?
His heart's not in it? Are you kidding me? The man is, what, 73 years old? And he has more energy and more drive than it takes to get up for a 3 hours a day show.
There's no way Scarborough actually watched any of that.
Oh, no, he didn't. To say that it's like or Heilman, a guy who literally gets every issue wrong. I don't know the last time John Heilman was right about a major political issue. Literally. When was the last time he was right? I can't think of one. But these are the most snooty, elitist, Manhattan transplant people who have never understood blue-collar America. I think Joe Scarborough did at one point, but he's so bought into and so sold himself out to New York mainstream media, supposed mainstream media, left-wing media, that he can't – he forgot where it came from.
We've been talking about Donald Trump not wanting, apparently, to get above 50% throughout his campaign, where he is. And I'm very careful. I have not been as careful in the past. I'm trying to be more careful not to say this was racist or that was racist. Instead, I'm trying to say it's racially insensitive. But yesterday reminds me there are times when he is appealing to neo-Nazis and white supremacists.
What a fraud. What a complete fraud.
Yeah, but he's trying not to say things like that anymore. He's really trying.
That's all they have. But again, I've said this so many times. This is really all they have. They don't have anything else. What else are they going to talk about? The economy? They're going to talk about how Joe Biden would have had a deal on Mexico or would be tougher on China? Oh, right. Right when we talk about how much money Hunter Biden has made in China. Are we really there? Are we really in this place? So we have a clear sense and an understanding about where America is. Donald Trump is actually willing to take the punches and take the hits from the lamestream media and all the elites and all the Hollywood crowd because he loves this country. You might not love every tweet that Trump has ever sent or everything he's ever, nickname he's ever given someone, but you cannot argue with the success of his policies. And Congress, if they truly cared about enforcing the border and stopping this massive flow across the border, they would convene a special immigration session and just redo and reform the asylum provision of U.S. immigration law. Very easy to do. Simple. This is simple. You have to apply for asylum from your home country. Our system is so overwhelmed and so overtaxed now, we are not able to process people who currently are here and adjudicate their claims. Given that, we have to slow things down. We'll still hear asylum claims, but you're going to have to make them in your home country. That's it. Well, and what he is going to do, and he got Mexico to agree to this, is that now everyone who crosses the border is going to be sent to Mexico. Pretty much everyone. I don't think there's almost any exception for that. So we'll see. We're going to watch and make sure this actually happens. But you can't say the guy's not trying everything. You know, the family separation, which got widely panned, Tom Homan and others were very clear on this. They said, I understand people don't like it. We don't like people breaking our laws the first second they cross our border. And I understand people don't like this, but when criminals go to jail, they're separated from their family. And guess what the child separation policy Tom Homan said accomplished? I think it was a 32% instant reduction in border crossings. But what happened? They pulled that back and then instantly spike and skyrocket of the family units. Now it's almost always family units. Let's go to Judd in Arizona. Judd.
Hi, Laura. Well, I heard this might be your birthday today, so I wanted to wish you happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. You're sweet. Thank you very much.
No, I just wanted to say I watched Trump's presentation last night, and I'm a Democrat here in Arizona, and I'm actually really impressed with, you know, the engagement with the crowd that he has. And he's letting the facts speak for themselves. You know, if we let the policies of the far left, you know, take over the country, he really laid out how that's going to impact the people. And I think the people get that. So, you know, I talked to friends of mine and they feel the same way. So I'm excited to see what happens in this election.
Well, I think that's a really astute way of looking at things. And I think most people are like this in the end. I mean, the idea that you're going to go into the voting booth and pull the lever for socialism, I just don't see that happening. And Joe Biden, and I said this on Fox, he is the best chance that the Democrats have to beat Trump. There's no one else. I don't care what the polls say. The polls are meaningless. Joe Biden was at a big fundraiser in Manhattan yesterday, and he made it clear to the people there, and I'll read some of the quotes in a moment. I'm not here to demonize the wealth creators in this country. I'm not here to demonize. You shouldn't be demonized for being successful, but I have ideas about how to incrementally change fiscal policy and tax policy to like make things better. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, he's not going to grow the economy faster than Trump. He's not going to have economic growth anywhere near Trump. There's no possible way he's going to be able to do that. Otherwise, Obama would have done it over 8 years. So if you love the flatlining recovery under Obama, you're going to love it under Biden. But he's the only one who has any chance. But even he has been pulled so far to the left that he's going to have to pay the piper with all these activist types. And they're all going to push left-wing policies on the Hill. I don't think people are going to vote for that. Nancy in California. Nancy, what'd you think of the rally?
Oh, I loved it. Good morning and happy birthday, Laura.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I love your show. No, the rally was great. I have college-age kids. I made them sit down and watch it. And we're here in Southern California, and we're big Trump supporters.
Well, California, if we want to see where socialism will take us, go to California. See what's happened to the state, see what's happened to sanctuary cities, see what's happened to homelessness, San Francisco, L.A., under the crush of communicable diseases, human waste in the streets. A paradise of California has been turned into a little mini experiment for what this will all look like without the beauty, the natural beauty, by the way. I appreciate it. By the way, Ronna McDaniel just tweeted out from the RNC, Donald Trump has raised a record-breaking $24.8 million in less than 24 hours for his reelection. That's unbelievable. The enthusiasm across the country for this president is unmatched and unlike anything we've ever seen. Trump 2020, keep America great, hashtag. $24.8 million. That's smashing pretty much every record that I can recall as far as fundraising in a relaunch. And I want to thank all of our great sponsors, including Genucel, Delta Animal Rescue, and Cerovital. They all help provide this podcast to you free every week, and you're going to learn more about their great products and services coming up inside the show.
We're fighting against the same far-left politicians that ravaged our great cities and crushed the dreams of African-American middle class. The same people who threw open our borders and allowed drugs, gangs, and illegal labor to devastate our poorest American communities. You know that. Our political opponents look down with hatred on our values and with utter disdain for the people whose lives they want to run. That's the way they've been doing it. And if you take a look at the African American community, how much progress has been made. The lowest unemployment numbers in the history of our country.
The president is seeking to expand on the Republicans' historic poor showing among African Americans, and the Democrats will have to respond with, he's a racist. So the president has made more of an effort to appeal to people outside the Republican Party than almost any president I can remember in recent years. I know Bush tried it, but he didn't really have much success. When he was governor of Texas, he had a pretty big Hispanic vote. Bush did. I think he had more than 40%. But Trump has really put the policies behind the rhetoric. And I don't think you can honestly say that anyone has done more for Black America and their prosperity and their hopes and dreams in recent years than this president. And I understand Obama's symbolic win and reelection meant an enormous amount to people. Just the fact that an African-American man becomes president was a historic, incredible thing for so many, and it was historic for the country. But when we're talking about policies and actually improving the wage earning capacity and opportunities for Black America, I don't see how you beat Donald Trump. I just don't. All right, joining us now is Raynor Jackson, founder and chair of Black Americans for a Better Future. It's a 527 super PAC established to get more turnout among this traditionally minority community. Raynor, it's great to talk to you. This push last night and I think the restatement of the president's commitment to all Americans flies in the face of all that we've been hearing from the likes of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Cory Booker, Kamala Harris, and countless media types, that this president's just a white racist who wants to make America white again. That's what we keep hearing.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on your show, Laura. Big follower of yours for years, and I think you do the Lord's work, especially on this issue of understanding the value of building relationships with the Black community. Let me tell you something. This president, Laura, has a great message to tell. His Achilles heel is, and I've heard you talk about this on your show in the past, the Republican Party and the conservative movement is borderline incompetent when it comes to communication. We have a message to tell. We have a story to tell. We have to do a better job taking our message directly to the Black community.
Well, and I think what happens is liberals believe that this is their territory. They don't want any encroachments into their territory. And for that reason, they remember during the campaign, they scared Trump off from going to Chicago. Remember, he had that big Chicago event planned and they canceled it because of threats of violence. And Trump didn't want to hurt Chicago. Yeah. And so he didn't go. But I think he has to go to these places.
Well, exactly. But Laura, he's got to do it with Blacks who have credibility.
Right. On the ground.
Like Bob Woodson, people like Herman Cain, people like Pastor Mark Burns, these are the people that have credibility. And Laura, having a Black with you is not the same as having the right Black with you.
Mm. Interesting. And I think I saw that when I did my town hall in Chicago. We were focused on the Englewood and the South Side Chicago problems and the crime and how to better deal with these just seemingly intractable issues. And I found that so many folks, and I met some great, especially women, but community leaders. You know what they said to me, Raynor? They said, "I can't believe you're actually here. You're actually here," because people say they care, but they never come. They never even ask us, what's going on here? What do you see? And I think engaging people on the ground is just, it's like half of the battle is showing up for the battle. I mean, you gotta engage.
Right. Laura, I'm a graduate of Oral Roberts University, and I worked for Oral for 4 years when I was an undergrad. And one of the things he would always tell me is go into every man's world and meet them at the point of their need. That's exactly what you're talking about, Laura. But can you imagine if we know that Secretary of the Treasury, Steve Mnuchin, is going to Chicago or New York or Atlanta, wouldn't it be nice if we could just pull off a side event while he's in town and pull together 50 or 100 Black entrepreneurs to meet with him privately and then have a media avail? Every cabinet secretary that are going into the states where we have a heavy population of Black, just do a side event with them. This is low-hanging fruit, Laura. You don't have to convince Black folks about conservatism. You have to just invite them to join the cause. That's the issue, not the message. It's inviting us to join the cause and be a part of the group.
And I think sometimes, and I've fallen into this trap before as well, sometimes it's easy to kind of smash back at the critics than it is to just continue to offer the positive, forward-looking agenda with real doers on the ground. Because, look, every time someone says Trump's a racist, I want to just smash them. I mean, it's just outrageous. It's defamatory, it's libelous, it's false, and it's meant to poison a conversation. And I get personally offended for him. But being offended or hitting back, that doesn't really... It doesn't accomplish much. It really doesn't. At least that's my view.
But if you have credible Blacks like me, Bob Woodson, Herman Cain, Mark Burns, who can push back with credibility and push back on substance. You shouldn't have to push back, Laura, because then it becomes a racial issue. But if you have a black... When, I did a column recently, Laura, and I'm going to get it to you, entitled, When Did Donald Trump Become a Racist? I embedded in this column, Laura, I have a clip on C-SPAN when Jesse Jackson named Donald Trump Man of the Year in New York. This is all on videotape. Jesse Jackson acknowledges Donald Trump gave him free office space on Wall Street for one of his projects. He gave Al Sharpton $50,000 in contributions when Al Sharpton was having problems meeting payroll. So was Trump racist then? So at what point did Donald Trump become a racist?
That's a really good point. Well, and I think Trump is certainly hoping to get the black turnout up for 2020. The Democrats yet are going to continue to play the race card. This was Don Lemon on airing Trump events on CNN. Let's listen.
If you're in the news media and then the jobs that we are, do we continue to allow space for propaganda and lies that we have to go back and correct? Think about the despicable people we've had in history. Think about Hitler. If you could look back on in history, would you say, well, I'm so glad that that person was allowed a platform so that they could spread their hate and propaganda and lies? Or would you say it probably wasn't the right thing to do to spread that?
Your reaction to that? I mean, again, rather than have a conversation, they'd rather have a moment of demonization. I have liberals on my show all the time, and I enjoy it, and I find they're good people. I don't dislike them at all personally, but we just have fun debates. It's fun. But they don't even want to engage.
Well, exactly. Liberals are like having a verbal tick, Laura. You know they're going to bring up Hitler, the race card, and it's like weak people take strong positions on weak issues. They have no intellectual substantive argument to justify liberalism, and so therefore, whenever they throw up the race card, the average white conservative, Laura, is like a deer in the headlights. And I'm so glad people like you will actually go toe-to-toe and not back down. We need to get some of your DNA in a lot of the House and Senate leadership.
Well, they probably don't have much patience for me because I'm calling them out all the time for failing the first 2 years of the Trump administration. They should have gotten this immigration thing fixed once and for all. They didn't do it. They kept promising the president they'd do it. They didn't do it. And, you know, Trump is oftentimes fighting both Republicans and Democrats, and he's like the only man out there with just maybe a few others in politics, not doing what you do, but just in straight elected politics, who's like, wait a second, aren't we supposed to be doing this for America and the American people and the American worker? Now, everyone else is playing to the Chamber of Commerce or playing to, you know, the big pharma or playing to, you know, big weed, pushing pot. You know, everybody's playing to some other constituency. But for the most part, Trump's been playing, I think, for America.
Well, there's no question. But again, I think the Achilles heel of this White House, Laura, is they need to do a better job on the communication front.
Yep.
And if we could do that, Laura, we can get north of 15-20% of the black vote. I can guarantee that. I served as a senior advisor to Ron DeSantis' gubernatorial campaign last year. Before I went down there, Laura, we were doing 2% of the black vote. We ended up getting 14% of the black vote, which was his margin of victory. So we have real-time data that shows that blacks are open to voting Republican.
I just love the fact that you came on. Raynard Jackson, founder and chair of Black Americans for a Better Future. Raynard, keep kicking out there. We'll have you on soon. It's great to talk to you. Let's go to Ryan in Oklahoma on the line here on the Laura Ingraham podcast. Rye.
Hi, Laura. How are you today? And happy birthday.
Thank you, honey. I'm great.
Excellent. Hey, I just wanted to say that I've been a Trump supporter from the very beginning. And, you know, I got fired up last night after watching the rally, and I am very excited about this election cycle. And I plan on voting for the president, and I plan on getting as many of my friends and family, you know, to the polls. And
good.
I just can't wait. Me and my wife are very, very fired up for this election cycle.
Yeah, well, you have the right impulse, which is it's great that you're voting for him, but how many others can you get to turn out? that is what all people who care about the future of this country and staving off this socialist crumble and crash that's going to come over us. You must bring other people to the polls. Don't let them sit home. You cannot do it. And if it means that you take a few hours and drive people to the polls, then do that. But anything you can do to get every family member and friend that you know who care to get out and vote, that's music to my ears. I love that, Ryan. Thank you so much. And I want to remind all of you that, you know, summertime is brutal on your skin, and especially your jawline, your neckline. That just seems to get hit with the ravages of aging and bad weather and so forth. And that's where my friends come in who have the great Genucel jawline cream. Robin from Lubbock, Texas, like so many of you, have used it, love it. She's blown away by the results. And with Chamonix's MDL technology, Genucel's brand new Genucel jawline treatment targets specifically that delicate skin on your neck area for tight, healthy, and younger looking skin. So you're going to see your mirror smile back at you. Wouldn't that feel nice? And 100% of your money back, no questions asked, if you don't see that it does for you what it's done for so many. And remember, you'll start seeing results soon. And some is find them skin looking better in less than 12 hours. Well, Genucel's immediate effects is also yours for free. So no double chin. Move against that bad skin with great products. I love these products. You're going to love them as well. All you need to do is text EYES1 to 77453 or go to Genucel.com. Remember, EYES1, EYES1, to 77453 or go to Genucel.com. Shipping is free as well. Genucel.com.
Virtually every top Democrat also now supports taxpayer-funded abortion right up to the moment of birth, ripping babies straight from the mother's womb. Leading Democrats have even opposed measures to prevent the execution of children after birth. You saw that in Virginia. Republicans believe that every life is a sacred gift from God.
Well, this evangelical turnout for Donald Trump is going to be massive. I think it's going to be bigger than last time. And people say, well, that's not enough. Well, it's a core of voters. And I believe it's a third of all voters describe themselves as evangelical. Joining us now is Amy Kremer, is the co-founder and chair of Women for Trump. Hey, Amy, how'd you think it went last night?
Oh, my gosh, it was amazing, Laura. And happy birthday. I'm so excited to be on with you on your birthday.
Thank you, honey.
Hope you have a blessed day. No, he was absolutely spectacular, and just listening to him gives me chills all over again. But I have to say, when he gave that line about a sacred gift from God, you know, every life, I think that was a louder cheer and applause than when he did the unscientific poll about make America great again or keep America great. I think the sacred life part was you could feel it rivet through Orlando.
Well, and I think that, again, if people look at, you know, these stupid head-to-head matchup polls 18 months before an election, they literally have learned nothing about America. Nothing. Nothing about American elections and nothing about 2016. They think it's all going to be 2018 when Trump wasn't on the ballot.
Right. And I mean, every time I'm asked about a poll, my only response pretty much is, you mean the same polls that said Hillary Clinton was going to win in 2016? I mean, come on. You really want us to look at those polls? It's just ludicrous that they keep going back to the polling.
And then in June of 91, Bush was actually leading the Democrat opposition, but of course he went on to lose. And then June 1995, Dole was over Clinton. Of course, Clinton ends up winning. This is in June, you know, then in 2011, Republican had 44% and Obama had 39%. Obama ends up winning re-election. So, again, none of this matters, but it's meant to try to demoralize and deflate Trump supporters. And I just laugh. I laugh all the way to the television camera when I see these things.
Well, and Laura, what they're trying to do is the media has become part of this where they're trying to shame Trump supporters for supporting him. And quite frankly, I'm tired of it. I'm tired of being shamed for being a woman that supports this president. I support him. I know why I support him. I will not back down. We're going to continue to go out there and fight for him. And they can come out with all the polling that they want to come out with. But you know what? It doesn't matter. A poll is a snapshot in time. And we have to work until that last ballot is cast on Election Day. And I believe right now, my gut tells me that this is going to be one of the biggest political landslides in history. If the economy continues to, you know, fire on all cylinders and this president continues to do what he has said he was going to do, his promises made, promises kept with the America First agenda. I mean, and that's all we're focused on. That's all we're focused on. The polling, it is a snapshot in time. And honestly, you know, they were wrong before, and I think that they're going to be wrong again.
Well, and I think, again, when we see the Democrats trotting out one unworkable policy after another, which will do nothing except increase your cost of living, hurt America's productivity, flatline wages, and give the upper hand to China. I mean, this should be an easy sell over the next 18 months. But I think the Democrats, Amy, only have pejorative. They only have Trump's a racist, Trump hates women, Trump hates minorities, Trump's a bad person. And they're going to try to use that cynically to cut and trim down women's support for Trump, which was actually pretty strong in the last election. So what does he have to do on the women voters front?
Well, we've been traveling across the country, and I will tell you, Laura, it's been shocking. The women say the more he fights back and pushes back against the media and the swamp, the more that they love him. They love him because he does what he says he's going to do and because he won't back down and cower, you know, from them. So I think what he needs to do is we want to see something done on immigration. And his hands are pretty much tied on that. I know he's doing all that he can. But immigration, the economy, what do women care about? We care about the economy. We care about national security. Education, healthcare, those are the things that women care about. And he is doing what he can. And that is what is important to women. If he is trying, even if he's not able to accomplish some of the things, because there are people in his own party that are still working against him, and the Democrats are working against him at every single turn. If these women see him continuing to fight, they're going to support him. And Laura, let me tell you something. I believe that there are women that are out there that marched in the streets with their pink hats on that will go in that ballot box and vote for this man because his policies are good for them and their families, just like they are good for you, our families. But it's in vogue right now to hate this president. And because of social media, we've become much more of a cliquish, high schoolish society, and everybody wants to fit in. So it's in vogue to hate this president, and that's what they want to be a part of that. And so let them, you know, if that's what they want to do, let them go do it. But I do believe that there will be some that will vote for him because they have more zeros in their bank accounts. They're able to take family vacations. They're able to send their children to private school that they've never been able to do before. So I think as long as he continues to do what he's done, I think he's going to continue to win women over.
Well, I think, again, the stories and the storytelling, Amy, and this is where you come in, and certainly the campaign has to do this across the board. Women's testimonials, women speaking to other women on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter, I think there needs to be a nationwide connected effort of women whose lives have been improved because of these this fiscal policy and care about the border policy. And just, this is my truth. I think you should call it my Trump truth, or my, this is my truth. You know, maybe this is my Trump truth, or this is my truth. Use their language against them. And in 30 seconds, a woman can say a lot to other women, and they should be young and old and every background and ethnicity and color and
absolutely and
push against this AOCization of demonization of Trump and Republicans and just say, look, we're not buying into your negativity. This is my life under the last 2 years. And this is how my life has gotten better. I think if you can kind of harness that energy and use all affinity groups to do it, that's a winner. And just absolutely plaster social media with "this is my Trump truth." I think that'd be, I just gave you a good idea.
I love that. And I totally agree with you. And I will tell you, as one of the things we're doing is we're going across the country and doing small events. And the one thing we hear over and over, because the Trump derangement syndrome is so bad, that people become isolated and they don't even want to talk to their family members about politics because they're afraid of the backlash.
Yep.
And so
they
start to feel alone. And what's happening is when we bring people out of their homes and get them to come together with other Trump supporters,
they're empowered.
They feel energized and exactly empowered. And they're inspired to go out. And we have these little pink cards that we've done up. It's a promises made, promises kept card. And actually, we just did the first printed version. And it's mom talk. I mean, it's mom talk conversation style about all the things he's done, because we need to be able to go out there and talk about that. Some of these people that watch, you know, the cable news networks, if they're watching anything other than Fox, they don't even know that he's accomplished so much.
No, they know
no
nothing.
Idea about
they think
Obama's
it's Obama's economy. This is what I kept saying last night on my show. Every time Sean Hannity would say something, I said, "Oh, Obama did that." Like, of course he didn't do any of that. But you're exactly right. But I'm telling you, personalize it. Numbers and graphs and charts don't move the electorate. Results and personal narrative, especially women who are busy and moms and working. They're like, "Tell me what you're seeing." Like, "Oh, that's a good point. Like, that's right. Wages have gone up, and my wages, my God, my 401k is up." And I'm like, this is amazing. And if we elect X, we're going to get Y and Z, and Y and Z are not going to be pretty. So it's kind of a combo of what he's accomplished and what they're coming to take from you. Yeah, that's what the Democrats are coming. Your wallet, your decisions, your home life, all of it is going to be changed under Democrat rule. Amy, keep swinging out there. We're just delighted that you came
on
today. And keep in touch with us throughout this election season. We're going to have you on again, obviously.
Thank you, Lauren. Have a great birthday.
All right. God bless. Amy Kramer, who is the co-founder and chairwoman of Women for Trump. Let's go to Steve in Ohio. Steve.
Hi.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Laura? Happy birthday.
I'm great. Thank you. You're very nice.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. I watched that rally last night, and I was amazed at the crowds and the enthusiasm. I'm an unabashed Trump supporter, have been since 2016. I did make the mistake of voting for Kasich in the Ohio primary, but it really quickly turned my mind around.
Yeah. What is he doing now, except grousing on CNN when they let him on? He's a complete zero. I'm sorry. I'm being uncharitable. But with the fact that that man did not, as governor of Ohio, even greet the Republicans at the RNC, that says everything about the man. I don't care if you've decided you're going to become a Democrat. But I believe it was 1980. And the Republicans had the RNC, I think it was in Detroit, and a Republican was not the mayor of Detroit, and he came and addressed the RNC. It's a Democrat. I think I have that right. Is that Coleman Young? Am I getting that? Is my memory correct? I'm not sure if it is correct. But this is 1980, Detroit. I believe it was Detroit, Michigan. And who was the mayor? And he addressed and welcomed the crowd, because they're bringing money into the city, right? So we don't even get the governor to say thanks for spending money in Ohio. That's how uncharitable he is. Anyway, poor Steve was trying to make a point.
It was a crime no one expected, and one many can't forget. 22 Hours, an American Nightmare. A new podcast from WTOP News and Podcast One details the heinous murders of a D.C. power couple, their 10-year-old son, and housekeeper inside their own home. The chilling messages from the victims being held hostage.
Hey, Nelly, it's Sava.
The complicated trail of evidence and shocking moments from the trial.
She thinks she knows how Darren Wint got inside the house.
His defense team drops a bombshell.
Will this investigation lead to the release of confidential audio recordings from the case?
So it's under general counsel review. I mean, I'm committing to making a transparent court.
22 Hours, an American Nightmare. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts today.
You are listening to the Laura Ingram Podcast. Remember, you want to be part of the show. Just go to email us at ingram.podcast@gmail.com. ingram.podcast@gmail.com. Follow me at Ingram Angle on Twitter. And you'll see what we're talking about, but you can call in about anything if you want. And this is more from Trump's kickoff rally in Orlando, Florida, maxed out crowd of 20,000 people at the Amway Center. Let's listen.
Since the very first day I walked through the doors of the White House, I have never forgotten who sent me there. You did. When I get behind my desk in the beautiful Oval Office, I think about only one thing: how the American people are going to win, win, win today.
I love the president when he's talking about you, the American people. Get it away from me and put it on you. He's doing it all for the American people. And he did that several times last night. I think that's his finest moment. And enough of Mueller and Hillary and Bleach Bit. Nobody cares about that. They care about what's going to happen in the country if we roll back all these gains and move toward some type of democratic socialism light. That's what they care about. So talk about your accomplishments. But he did all that. He did a lot of that. You are lucky enough to now listen to Craig Shirley, renowned historian, author, biographer. His biography of Mary Ball Washington is going to be out. When is it out, actually, Craig? I should know this off the top of my head. When is it coming
November.
Out? Oh, my gosh. It's so awesome. I can't wait.
Yeah, unfortunately, I tried to time it for your birthday today, but it...
oh, darn it. Oh.
I looked up your horoscope.
Yeah, what does it say?
You've been chatty from a very early age.
That's true. I've got to say. You know what? I also saw, like, if today is your birthday, it says something like, people can be scared of you until they get to know you. I'm like, oh, that's good. Good. Like, you people mistake your intensity for anger or meanness, and it's like, but then they get to know you or something like that. I'm like, oh yeah, that's pretty accurate. So Craig, I have a question.
Well, I
about
think when I first met you, I was a little scared of you.
Yeah. Okay.
Or intimidated.
All right, I don't like talking about myself. I like talking about all these issues. But, you know, any I take birthday, I'm like, well, I'm still around. My obituary isn't yet being written by liberals at the Washington Post.
No, well, you know, Reagan stopped at 39. You know that, right?
Yeah, exactly. He never aged.
This is just the anniversary of your 39th birthday.
Oh, thank you, sweetie. So let's talk about where we are with this cycle that we're in. It's a cycle of just nastiness. I mean, I've got to say, even with Reagan, Craig, it was nasty, and they ridiculed him. But because we didn't have social media and the cable news networks, that's the difference.
That amplifies everything. And the hyperspeed of communications in which we live means you can send a mean message within, you know, a matter of seconds. Whereas in the old days is that, you know, by letter or by telephone or something, you took time to think about things before you said them. Today you don't always think about things because of the speed of communication. So, and there's competition. So it's a kind of it's a race to the bottom, you know, to get attention. And the worse you say about somebody, unfortunately, the more attention you get, which is, you know, kind of the way of the world's always been is that the old adage is that a rumor makes its way around the world, before the fact is getting out of bed in the morning. And it's just the fact of human nature. But yes, you're absolutely right. I think it's meaner now than it ever has been before.
Never seen anything like it. And I think what you're finding is that the left is grabbing onto anything it can because,
sure,
of course, the economy is so strong. Envy of the advanced economies in the world, even traditionally. Shut out groups, people shut out from recoveries, are seeing great progress made when it comes to economic opportunity. So they see that, so they have to say Trump's a racist, he's a bad person, he's a misogynist,
right,
he's going to come and shut down every, you know, abortion.
Don't you know there are concentration camps on the border?
Oh, no. We have to talk about that. We're going to get to that in a second.
But isn't that interesting? In a world where information is readily available, where anybody can know anything about everything, everything in the world is available in your cell phone. The knowledge of the world is available in your cell phone, and yet she goes out there and says a blatantly false deliberately provocative. And I don't think it's uninformed. I think she knew exactly what she was doing. I don't think she knew it was a big lie, and she was gonna, and she's going to try to get away with a big lie.
And if you question her, you're anti-Latina.
Yeah, or yeah, anti-woman, anti-Hispanic.
Yeah. You think she's stupid? You
anti-Latina?
Can't.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
let's play it so people know what we're talking about, because thankfully a lot of our listeners do not listen to her on Instagram or follow her. So let's just play it so people understand what Craig and I are referring to.
The United States is running concentration camps on our southern border. And that is exactly what they are. They are concentration camps. And if that doesn't bother you, whatever. I want to talk to the people that are concerned enough with humanity to say that we should not, that never again means something.
Your reaction to the quote, concentration camp.
The left has perfected a very effective debate technique. You took a debate in high school and college. You remember, you could say whatever you wanted, right?
I never took debate.
It was up to the other side to disprove you.
I never took debate.
This is an effective debate technique by the left, which is to say whatever they comes into their fool heads, make it up, tell half lies, tell complete lies, and force the other side to waste their time disproving the lie. And so now is that, you know, she says, well, there's concentration camps on the border. Now, you know, that's ill-informed and untrue and stupid. But the fact is that you're forced to prove that the concentration camps don't exist on the border. And this happens every day on the part of the left with charges about Trump, charges about conservatism, charges about you, about Rush Limbaugh, about Sean Hannity. You know, is that it's a very, very effective technique that they've now perfected. And there's the only way to refute it is to come up with a better set of facts and make your own charge and simply ignore their allegations.
So, yeah. So I think engaging in any, well, there's a couple things, right, for strategy. Engaging on every Instagram post or Facebook, I do think the power of ridicule needs to be harnessed much more effectively.
Absolutely.
Than it's being harnessed. And I do that a lot. I mean, I do it on my show, but I do it. I use humor and ridicule because young people like it. Women like it. I mean, everyone likes it.
Everybody likes it. But in his book, whose name escapes me now, about the protests at Kodak and the boycott of Kodak and Saul Alinsky's book.
Oh, right. Rules for Radicals.
Yeah. He devoted a significant portion of that book to the effective political technique of making fun of your opponent.
Right. And look, they do it with the Trump baby balloon, which I think is cute. I keep saying I think they should. I think Trump. See, if Trump had that type of a little wry sense of humor, I would grab that baby balloon and sign it. I would sign it and say, I love
Absolutely.
Babies. I love babies. I love Trump. So I love Trump baby balloon. And then it wouldn't fly it anymore. Literally, he should just say, I love this balloon. I love the fact that I'm presiding over all of you at your rallies. And just have fun with it because they look so stupid. They just look so dumb. Like, what are they going to hit him with a squirt gun next?
It's a boxers, not briefs. Okay, next time.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah,
I noticed he kind of did that at the rally when he said, this is MAGA country. He took Jussie Smollett's this is MAGA country lie and turned it into an applause line. And he did the same thing with fake news, too, because fake news originally was like a Hillary talking point.
Oh, yeah.
And then Trump took that. So you're right, Lord. He should take the baby.
I just think take what they do and say, well, I say the only thing that I think maybe we need to do basic history tutorials over at the House of Representatives for people who might have been doing other things rather than going to history class when they were
know.
In high school.
You think if you talk to those people in monosyllabic or polysyllabic words, they're going to know what you're talking about?
No. I mean, exactly, completely. But and a friend of mine last night said, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think Instagram posts by AOC with her millions of followers have ever actually been focused on actual concentration camps in China, where they're putting like a million people in concentration camps, re-education camps. I don't think she's ever mentioned that, as far as I can tell. Maybe I've missed it.
I was just cogitating on other things that she has missed, other opportunities she's missed the gulags of the Soviet Union, or the fact that there's actually more slaves in the world today than there were in the time of American slavery 170 years ago. Is that it's funny how the left focuses on what it is they focus on and completely ignore the things that don't help make their points.
The obsession with the polls, we were reminding everyone that Mondale was ahead of Reagan in 1983.
So was Gary Hart.
Yeah, so is Gary Hart. So what do we think about that, given your history? You worked for Reagan.
Oh,
you were around for the campaign.
Laura, it's such a waste of time. Richard Nixon was 30 points ahead of Hubert Humphrey in the summer of 1968 and ended up winning by less than 1%. Reagan was behind Gary Hart. Reagan was behind Walter Mondale. Reagan ended up smashing Walter Mondale by 20 points and 20 million votes. Polls are not only useless, they're sometimes worse than useless because they get you talking about what's not important instead of focusing on what is important.
Well, I completely agree.
What I tell you before is that the first three letters of the word consultant, right? Never forget.
Oh, the worst. I mean, and I see these people who are these never Trumpers on TV.
Sure.
Rick Wilson. Like, I mean, when is the last time any of them were right on any major issue? Literally.
I've looked these people up before.
What have they ever done?
GOP consultant, GOP strategist. I can't find a race that they've ever won. I scratch my head and I say, how do these people eat?
I don't understand how they continue to get employed, except they're useful idiots for the left.
Yes.
So they're just doing the left's work for them, and they get invited on. I mean, if you're and then there's people like David Gergen, God bless him, who's when you talk to him, he's a nice person. I mean, he really is a nice guy when you talk to him.
But, yeah, it's a complete traitor to Reagan, though.
Yeah, but he actually was in the room, you know, with President Reagan, and now you're throwing all in with the left and socialism, and you're not calling that out? What?
Because he's making a deal for a new power broker. This is not a man of principle. This is not a man of conviction. Hey, look, he worked for Ronald Reagan and for Bill Clinton. So what does that tell you? Is that he's interested in the coin of the realm, which is access to media and lobbyist money and principles be damned. Besides, is that he wasn't. Everybody around Reagan knew Gergen was undermining the Reagan administration and was constantly leaking against Ronald Reagan. But he was protected. So they really couldn't, get rid of him, but they did the best to shut him out. But everybody knew he was an enemy.
Well, I've got to say the media today, it's hard to think about and remember in many ways what it was like. In so many ways in the country, we didn't have the mass crush of illegal immigration. We didn't have the same level of coarseness amplified by social media. We didn't have 24-hour drumbeat of nastiness and negativity. The country was a lot more, I think, we were divided. You know, you're always divided, as you say.
We've always been divided.
Yeah.
Thank you for saying that. Thank you, Laura, for saying that, because I get so sick and tired of people going, oh, we need to be united like we used to be.
Please.
We've never been united.
No. But I would say, like, people did stand generally for the Pledge of Allegiance or the anthem. I mean, there were some things that still
were common cultural touchstones.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And now those are gone. Like, under God on the Pledge of Allegiance, or under God and the coinage, or like, people didn't bicker about stuff like that. But even that now, with the massive changes to our country, even those touchstones are gone. You know, there was a big celebration online the other night because a Confederate statue of a soldier in Tennessee was defaced with "You're all racist," and people were saying, "Where do I buy more paint? Where do I buy more paint?" Well, let's do a GoFundMe page if anyone's arrested for this. Like, again, ahistorical, anti-historical, demonization squads, hit squads. It's that part of it is very depressing.
Deconstructionism of the left. I would submit all those things I agree with entirely, and the reason the country has changed and for the worse is because the left in America and the Democratic Party has changed for the worse, because they have adopted a Jacobin view of the world, a deconstructionist view of the world, and instead of the constructive democratic liberalism of Franklin Roosevelt, Harry Truman, and John Kennedy, they've embraced the radical socialism of George McGovern and Jesse Jackson and other leftists, whose real goal is to, and Trump was right. Trump was right last night when he said that their goal is to destroy America. He's absolutely right. Their ideological goal, like the French Revolution, is to destroy the culture and society of America, destroy property, destroy money, destroy family, destroy respect for each other, destroy the rule of law in order to reorder society with themselves on top, but create a new utopia, so to speak, in which everybody has nothing. We have to all start over in order to create an equal playing field so that we all start out, you know, with nothing and themselves on the ruling classes on top. That's what this is about.
Yeah, well, replace America with a new electorate, $150,000 a month. You can do a lot with just repopulating the country with new people who don't really have an affinity because of our public schools and no assimilation into American history. So that's they're doing it. They've successfully done that in states like Virginia, and they're trying to do it in even rural areas now. And again, Republicans, their unholy alliance with the Chamber of Commerce and all of these big money people, they just kept it all going. And
that's why the 2020 election is more important than the 2016 election.
Yeah, whether it's going to be a movement for change or just a passing flirtation.
He's a detour in history. Whether Trump was a detour in history or whether or not he represents a significant social and political urge by the country to fight off the forces of political correctness. Just as Reagan's reelection in 84 was more important than the election in 80, because if he loses in 84, he's dismissed as a detour in history. But instead is that he wins a smashing re-election, and people come to understand that Reaganism is the new dominant philosophy, not only in the Republican Party, but in the conservative movement, and was for 20, 30 years thereafter. So it's interesting. What the left is going to do has a great bearing on what is going to happen in the election. You know, nobody drove the left crazier than Richard Nixon. And so in 72, instead of nominating somebody who stood a chance against Nixon, like, you know, Senator Scoop Jackson from Washington State, who was a centrist Democrat, they instead went crazy and nominated George McGovern, who was negotiating with pot smokers at the Democratic Convention to legalize pot, right?
And
the 72 platform said that nobody could inherit more than $100,000. Everything had to be turned over to the federal government thereafter, which was the purest essence of socialism.
Oh,
in 84, nobody drove the left crazier than Ronald Reagan. So instead of nominating somebody who stood a chance like John Glenn, they go ultra-left and they nominate Walter Mondale, who then bows down to the radical feminists and picks the wholly unqualified Geraldine Farrar as his running mate and help ensuring Reagan's reelection. Yeah. Nobody drives the left crazier than Donald Trump. So as much as everybody fears the nomination of Joe Biden, I don't think that's going to happen because, A, the Democratic Party never nominates its front runner in non-incumbent years anyway, and, B, he's far too centrist, at least the image of him. If history is anything, they're going to nominate a radical socialist like Elizabeth Warren or something
Oh, good. Well, let's end on that. Craig Shirley.
But it's a great tutorial then. It's a great object lesson for the American people and for the world about what is the superior philosophy. Is it freedom and capitalism, or is it collectivism and the welfare state?
Yeah, that's the choice for the electorate in 2020. Craig Shirley, it's always just such an education. So great to talk to you. Historian, esteemed Reagan biographer. And his new biography of Mary Ball Washington will be out in November, and it's a page-turner. It's a beautiful book. Craig, we'll talk to you soon. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast. Remember, America now and forever. We'll be back soon. And remember, follow me on Twitter at Ingraham Angle, also Facebook, and keep in touch with us on email at ingram.podcast@gmail.com. See you next time.
We are one movement, one people, one family, and one glorious nation under God. And together, we will make America wealthy again. We will make America strong again. We will make America safe again. and we will make America great again. Thank you, Orlando. Thank you, Florida.
Hey there, Rob Cesternino from Rob as a Podcast. And if you're a Big Brother fan, you know the summer is all about one thing, watching crazy people locked in a house on Big Brother. And we've got episode recaps after every episode with the past house guests talking about all the updates from the game and the gossip from the live feed. Listen to Rob as a Podcast exclusively on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One. And if you love the show, why don't you share it or even leave us a rating and review?
Prepare to get stunned. The Steve Austin Show is back and better than ever.
And I've been kicking his ass, kicked out of the pile driver. You, it's time to go home.
With new exciting episodes featuring tales from his new life, unbelievable past interviews, and talks to pro wrestling pals. You name it, Steve's on it.
You're a hell of a damn wrestler.
Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.